welcome everyone to another edition of Renegade Radio. We're glad to have our studio guest here today. We've got Anthony Moore from Jobtopia and Stacy Scott from Sazing, which is a relative startup and part of the parent company Elja, I believe, if I got that right. Is that right, Stacy?
Yes.
All right. Well, I want to welcome you guys to the show. Let's get right into it, and let's talk about who you guys are so we can talk about how you're breaking some of the rules of conventional thinking, which is pretty much why our audience tunes in here every week. So, Anthony, if I can, let me start with you. And by the way, this is not Anthony taking away the lady's spot. Stacy asked to defer, so we're going to let the guy go first today. But, Anthony, tell us a little bit about Jobtopia, who you guys are, and what you do.
Well, first of all, thank you for inviting me down here today. Well, what Jobtopia does, we're a very specialized staffing company. So we saw a need for combining executive search style headhunting services with a very fast, responsive, traditional staffing, like attempt to hire, very, very fast-paced, moving staffing. We've combined both those models together to provide both accounting services and IT services to our customers. So that's really been our focus, and primarily in Atlanta. But as we've grown and started attracting new customers, they've really liked this model. They started pulling us into other cities, other states. So it's really our customers that have forced us to grow into other states.
So how do you guys differ? You know, just kind of bring our guests up or our listeners up to speed. How do you guys differ from a traditional recruiting model?
That's a great question, and I think it is important to understand how we became this way, because we started the company as an accounting and finance firm. But back in 2008, 2009, the market was really rapidly declining, and we knew we had to adapt. And I've got a business partner, Brian Cascarano, and we began to see a trend in IT. And we knew we needed to expand our service offering, and when we brought in our two IT professionals to launch that service, Betsy Robinson and Joanna Thompson Ferrier, the four of us created a model that we didn't see in the marketplace. And it was this uniqueness of the true headhunting. Now, you know, what does that mean? Why is that different? So many recruiters today just rely on posting a job on Monster, Career Builder, and Dice. So what does that give them? It gives them access to a very small pool of people who are looking to make a job change. But the vast majority of professionals, okay, in IT and in accounting, they're gainfully employed. They are working. So we needed a model that would allow us to reach into and cherry pick the very best people that the market has to offer. So we combined that operation, that ability, that skill, which is lacking. So many of the recruiters today, we call post and pray. Maybe the right candidate will come to them. Well, we don't take that approach. We're very proactive. We are very aggressive, if you would say, in the marketplace, attracting talent to our customers. Then you combine the fast-moving pace of a client comes and says, we need a contractor to work for 6 months. Well, that person's probably not working right now, so we have to have a different model to attract that person very quickly. So we've combined both of those, and now the customer doesn't have to have multiple vendors to manage this, you know, complex HR cycle. We give them both.
Well, now how has that model had to adapt, or has it had to adapt with the changes in the economic climate? I mean, I certainly understand that once upon a time you were having to cherry pick talent because you post a job and a lot of people are gainfully employed. Now with so many people out of work, you know, you hear about companies that they're overrun with resumes when they post a job. So has the model adapted to still pull those quality candidates, but again, help people with the problem that there's just too many applicants?
Well, that's an excellent point, because you do want to take advantage of social media. You do need to harness the power of the internet to get your message out about these great clients, these great opportunities. So we have to use that as a funnel, one of many funnels that we use to attract the talent to the organization. So it then becomes on us. How do we quickly screen and vet what we call the applicant, the person who may be slightly unhappy, maybe they're unemployed. They send their resume in. We have to have the technology and the tools to quickly evaluate that person in addition to these other deeper dive, more research-intensive kind of headhunting, you know, techniques. So we've adapted by learning how to use very effectively all the social media, okay, that's out there.
Well, speaking of social media, that's a big buzz right now that people are talking about as far as the hiring and firing process, you know, where online presence is being actually considered in the hiring process. Do you guys look at that as well? Are you looking at how somebody is, you know, out on the web, what kind of web presence they have and things of that nature?
In terms of the candidate, how does that candidate promote?
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, you're going to find most candidates today, most people, most a lot of professionals are using these professional sites like a LinkedIn.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's a great way for them to stay connected with their with their coworkers, past coworkers. It doesn't necessarily mean that they're, you know, unhappy looking for another position. So we might find an IT professional might have a more robust personal website versus, say, the CPA.
Mm-hmm.
So you kind of have to know your market and how to use social media to find somebody. But let's be honest, things go viral. And so if you're trying to hire, you want to have something compelling somewhere in that sphere because it could go viral. And that's where you begin to reach people that you never would have been able to reach, you know, through your own personal just efforts.
Right. So what industries or what sectors are really hot right now? I mean, IT, I've heard several people have come through shows and talked about IT is really gaining steam. What else is gaining steam in the job market right now?
Well, first and foremost, you're absolutely right. IT is very hot. I think it's a misnomer. You know, you hear the unemployment rate is about 8.3, depending on what numbers that you look at. Some people would argue it's up to 15-20%, the total number. In IT, in some cases, it's zero. There are some skill sets that everyone is employed. Now, the other practice we have is accounting and finance, and we have made investments in that group because we believe that group is coming back. All right, so we think we're going to begin to see more in manufacturing, more in engineering. I don't know if we're going to see construction and home building yet. I mean, that was a big market for Atlanta for so many years. I think that's still a way off before we see that growing. So
that's an interesting market in and of itself. I met with a construction guy yesterday, and you know, he obviously expressed some of the challenges that you're talking about, but senior living construction is really picking up right now from what I understand. I mean, we're going through the baby boomer, you know, generation, and we're needing more of the assisted living, long-term care type facilities. I'm hearing a lot of movement there, so I would think accounting and finance definitely picking up in that arena.
And that's an excellent point, because the industry in that case is elderly care.
Mm-hmm.
It just so happens that you have to have the construction component, you see, to provide that service. So that's an interesting point. Right. Now, for accounting and finance, typically we're going to look for an organization that is headquartered here or has a major presence here. Because, for example, assisted living, you might have a facility or facilities throughout the Southeast, but the headquarters could be in the Northeast. So for us specifically, we want organizations, we want to be on those vendor lists where they're headquartered, primarily in Atlanta. That would be our first preference.
Let me ask a question about that, because that's an interesting point. I found out something that I didn't realize. As we've been bringing guests on the show, we found that there are several companies out there that are not headquartered here in Atlanta. You know, they're headquartered perhaps out in Southern California, for example, but their office here is actually larger than the headquarters. So you could almost call it the headquarters, because everything runs out of here. It's just they happen to officially be home-based somewhere else, but Atlanta's really leading their presence. Are they still good candidates for you?
Absolutely. We have some customers that have maybe the core C-level professionals, like your CEO, CFO, CIO. They may just love to live in California or maybe up in Massachusetts and some of those areas, but their core operations is in Atlanta. So that's where we have what you'd call boots on the ground. That's where all of our advisors, our consultants, who are working directly with these companies, we know where those people are. So they don't technically have to be headquartered here, but there needs to be obviously a consolidation of accounting and IT for us to be, you know, a value to that service. But to touch on the other area that you're asking about growth, I think high tech is definitely an area of growth. I'm doing some work with the Chamber of Commerce, and there's a lot of talk right now of how do we build out more jobs in the technology sectors here in Atlanta. So there is a very concerted effort among the leaders and politicians here in Georgia to make Atlanta an even greater hub. Because right now, Atlanta doesn't roll off the tongue as a technology hub, but the reality is we have, with Coca-Cola and many of the other large organizations, technology as a vital component of how they want to go to market is growing. So there are a lot of services building around these large organizations like a Cox, like a Coke, like a Turner. So you're going to see a lot more investment in capital investment, working with Georgia Tech and other education firms, institutions, to build an ecosystem that will allow Atlanta to continue to attract more and more high-tech companies here. You just saw how they landed Caterpillar. That was a huge win for Georgia. You're going to see much more of that kind of concerted effort around IT.
Well, let me ask this question about how jobs are changing a little bit. With technology advancing, cloud computing obviously getting really hot, and with Atlanta having such a traffic problem, I know there's a lot of issues on the table. There's some resolutions to try to get the SPLUS thing going so that we can expand some of the roadways and take on a lot of projects over the next 10 years. But are you seeing, and I know you guys adopt this personally, where more people are working from home, more people are working remotely, where they're not having to make that commute, and technology is really lending itself. There are a lot of these companies, as they expand and grow and hire, are they looking for people that need to be in the office? Are they expanding in outside office where people are working from home?
That is a great question. I hope every company in Atlanta listens to this today, because for them to truly adapt to the workforce and to attract the top talent, they've got to learn how to incorporate these new ideas. And this whole radio program is about, what do you do that's different? How have you been successful? We're successful because we didn't let the constraints of space limit us. And with the technology, we said, that's right, we can be virtual, and we are. Now, yes, we do have a corporate office, and we do spend 2 to 3 days in the office. But that model can be used, and companies have to figure out, how do we trust our employees? I mean, I think in some ways it could be a trust issue, and I think legitimately in accounting and finance, there are issues, because you're giving people access to very important, very expensive, you know, ERP systems and data. How do these companies allow their SAP or their whatever their ERP system is, how do they allow their accountants and other people to log into those systems securely to do the work? And I think once companies can get comfortable with that, then they can begin to be more flexible and allow these, what I call the bread and butter accountants, right, to have that flexibility. It happens more in IT. We had a huge project for a client in December, and we brought in consultants from Texas, from Florida, all right, and from other areas in the country, and they all worked remotely, and the project went off great. So I think our friends in accounting have a little ways to go there,
right?
And I think that'll help them attract. You know, if you're in Alpharetta, the client's in Alpharetta, and there's a great professional that lives on the south side of Atlanta, wouldn't you want them to work for you? There's no way they're going to drive 40 miles one way through Atlanta. You can't pay them enough.
Yeah, I think we're going to see a major push towards that. I mean, I heard some statistic the other day that I think they were talking about Cobb County, and they said 63% of the workforce commutes outside of Cobb County to work. And I'm just thinking, wow, you know, that's a lot of people on the road. It's a lot of unnecessary traffic. And with technology advancing, I just don't see it. And I'm seeing more small businesses really catch on to this, which is interesting.
And you're talking about quality of life. And if the organization can get out in front and create a better quality of life, they now have created their own point of differentiation, which is exactly what we have done. We've created a point of differentiation for all of our employees. We've got incredibly loyal employees that work at Jobtopia because we don't have those constraints on them. And right. it's a culture in and of itself. It's wonderful.
Right. I'm hearing that so much, talking about culture of organizations and really that being a driving factor. And a lot of companies are hiring more for culture these days than for skill set, because they feel they can teach the skill set, but they can't teach people the culture.
That's right. And I would take it a step further beyond culture, and I would say principle. If you have core business principles that you don't waver from, that also helps create a culture. And we're in a culture, we're in a business where we are dealing with a lot of sensitive information that both the professional and the clients share with us. And you have to have a principle, right, of honesty, of integrity, of putting your needs second, because people feel when you push your agenda, and that does not build a healthy relationship. So when you focus on, this is what my principles are, and instill those principles, frankly, hire people that have those principles, that creates the culture, and that makes it successful. So I don't have to worry about, well, that person's working remotely. That's okay. I know they have these principles. And so I think that, you know, adds to the culture and further supports your idea.
All right. Well, I got more questions for you, but I want to put those on hold. And before we get into those, I'd like to bring Stacy into the conversation. Can you hang out with us for a few minutes while we visit with Stacy?
Would love to.
All right. Thanks so much. So, Stacy, let's talk about your company now. Sazing is a relative startup portion off of your parent company, Elja. So tell us a little bit about what Sazing is all about and what you guys do.
Okay. Well, I'm actually going to start off just a little bit with Elja, because Elja actually has been in business for 11 years, servicing Fortune 50 companies by providing them with their customer experience. And what that means is that we are their face to the customer. We take calls for them. We answer emails, web and chat. So the different ways that they communicate with their customers, if the customer has an issue or needs some additional information, then they think they're talking to the Fortune 50 company because we have a branded service, but they're actually speaking to Elja. So that actually ended up leading to Sazing. And the reason is because as a small business owner, I found that I was taking advantage a lot of times of having a contact center that was able to service customers and provide meaningful answers, that I was able to use them as the small business owner when I was out on the road, or I needed things, or I needed to be able to communicate with customers and I couldn't take it all in myself. So recently, in wanting to expand our market, we realized that there's a real opportunity for small businesses, because a Fortune 500, a Fortune 50 can go out and they can outsource this type of service. But that's because they need a lot of people to be able to service it. They've already got processes in place. They have training in place. They've got answers that already exist. Small business owners don't have that type of structure a lot of times. And so therefore, when a small business owner looks to be able to outsource any of their customer service, then what they get is really a glorified answering service. So a customer calls in with an issue, they can't answer the question. And so you still get all the same phone
calls.
Sometimes
the small business owner can't answer the question either.
Right. This is true.
That's a whole different story, right?
This is true, right. What if you're in a meeting and calls are coming in, it'd be great to be able to have somebody that can answer that. So the only option the small business owner really has right now when it gets too much for them is to either hire somebody, so to get that first hire, or, if the work gets too much for the people that they've already hired, instead of keeping these high-valued people that are maybe the salesperson that they've hired or the engineer that's actually providing the service, they end up doing these low the task is high value, but somebody at a lower pay grade can be able to take care of those needs. And the problem is that you don't need a whole person. So you might need them for 6 minutes every hour, right?
And I thought this was interesting because you said you can buy 1/480th of a person.
Right.
Like, how does that? Would I get their fingernail? Right. I mean, what does that mean?
Earlier when you were talking just now, you threw out cloud computing. So people now are becoming familiar with cloud computing, where you've got the server and people are allowed to be able to share the services, or you have software instead of buying the whole package, you can use it as you need it. Well, think of us as people in the cloud. So you can, we like to say that we bill by the hour but track by the minute. So instead of having to hire somebody who you really need them for 6 minutes every few hours a day, but you have to hire somebody to sit there and give them other things to do during the day
of work, 54 minutes of solitaire.
Exactly.
I get it.
And then remember, not only do you have to employ them, but you have to provide benefits for them. You have to handle their payroll. You have to manage them to make sure, are they actually doing their work? Are they out on a smoke break? All of that. Well, we take care of all of that for you. And we get the person, and what you're given is a person on the other end of the phone or the email or the chat that has meaningful answers for your customer.
Well, let's talk about that for a second. How do they get those meaningful answers?
We actually have a system that we call EPIC, and it stands for Elgis People and Process Information Core. And it's a system that we have created. It's proprietary to Elgis, and we did it so that we could do a good job of servicing the Fortune 50s. But it actually relates to small business just as well. Instead of us having a lot of information about a particular product line, then we have a lot of information about a company. It's the way that we build that and the way that we get the information and process it and the way that we train our people, who we hire. It's a full system that we've incorporated. And as a matter of fact, EPIC was so interesting that Gartner Group selected Elgis as one of the 2012 cool vendors for business process outsourcing because of EPIC. So it's this EPIC system that we have that allows us to be able to get people that are trained, that understand your company's culture, they understand your products and services, and they understand your business model and how you work, and that's how they're able to be able to provide meaningful answers. Your customers that are contacting us will have no idea that we are not sitting in your office and working for you directly, that we are also working for other people. And that's how you can get a portion of a person. So really the best analogy is people in the cloud.
All right, so let me ask another question here, because this is a hot topic for me. It's a big pet peeve. I promised you lots of softballs. This one may have a little more heat on it, but I'm sure you can handle it.
It's quite all right.
here's my question. I actually put something, I tweeted this out the other day, just one of my frustrations. So often we see companies where policy is used as a justification to avoid common sense and really just human decency. How do you guys help a small business deal with that fact? Because when people call in, sometimes they're upset and they don't want to hear what the policy is. They want a solution. They want somebody to just understand, hear them, and help them fix their problem. Can you share with us how you guys do that?
Well, you know, everybody's heard the Nordstrom stories, right? You know, you take a spare tire in, or tire in, and Nordstrom doesn't sell tires, but you get your money back, right?
Right.
Well, you know, our employees are told we are the Nordstroms of contact center. So no question comes into our center without getting an answer. Now, we may have to go chase it down, but the customer's going to get an answer. We can't promise, obviously, an answer to everything when the person contacts us, but we can promise that you don't have to sit on hold while we go get it. We're going to follow up and get back to them. So we have a system internally that we have set up so that balls don't drop, and that's actually what we call it. Balls are in the air. We are not allowed to drop a ball, period. No balls drop.
That's what we strive for. That is so huge for a business. I mean, I really want to point that out because I want to make sure our listeners get that. When I've called in, I think people out there listening can attest to the similar experience. A couple things that I just hate to have happen. One, I hate when I call in to get a question answered or to deal with a problem, and they tell me I have to call somewhere else.
Oh, my gosh.
I don't want to have to make that call. Connect me, transfer me. You make the call, but don't put it back in my court, number one. Number two, I hate when somebody tells me no without going and asking the question. And even worse, if you ever ask for a supervisor, and they say, well, you can talk to my supervisor, but they're going to tell you the same thing I told you. Wow. That's when I wish you could reach through the phone and choke somebody, right? So you guys don't do that to people. You are gonna keep that ball in the air, and you're going to help me resolve my problem.
Well, I'm actually going to take you a step further there, because I am a very picky, as you can imagine, customer service person. I have so many pet peeves. And so a lot of what we do is designed around the things I hate
right.
to make sure that we don't do that. But So on your first question, one of the things is that the customer's time is valuable. So I not only hate when I get transferred, but I've already explained my whole story to you.
Yes.
Do not transfer me and make me do it again.
Yeah, right? And it's probably the third time, right? Because
right,
the first
exactly.
thing you went through was the automated system that made you give all the information.
Right.
And then you had to repeat it to the operator, and now you're getting transferred. So you're really on at least attempt three.
Exactly. And we've all sat there, and this is the one I hate where they say, just a moment, and they come back in a half an hour, right? Let me get off of the phone. So, you know, we do things like, if we can't answer it on the spot there with a meaningful answer, we're going to let you go And we'll get the answer and get back to you so that you can go on with your day. Now, remember, we're talking about our customer's customer right now, because our clients are the actual businesses, but they care about how we treat their customers. So the customer's going to not have that frustration, because we're going to let you go. And then we'll get back to you and we'll find out, do you prefer to have us get back to you via phone or via email or, you know, et cetera. The other thing is that we capture the information so that you're only telling your story once. You don't have to do this over and over again. When it comes to asking for a supervisor, we train our people so that they know what it is that they can answer. And you don't get to say no. No just isn't an option. No, you can't do that. It's, you know, let me see what we can do for you. Because really what the customer wants to know is, what can you do? I don't care what you can't do. That doesn't help me at all. And so it's really just a matter of how you train the people and how you empower them. And I actually took a class one time and I got this and I really held on to it. And they had an acronym called SPARSE, and we really used this to build our center. And the quote that I love to use is that if you try to empower people without providing systems, it leads to anarchy and chaos.
Yes.
So one of the things is that small businesses really need to be able to empower their people, but they don't have the time or the experience sometimes to put in these systems. So we've put in the systems. If you outsource, then your business says, we're managing the people. We have our systems for doing that, the systems for how information flows and is processed. And now we can empower the people on the front lines to be able to really service a customer, because they know the rules of the road and what they can and can't do. Now, because you're a small business, we also know, who are we supposed to be taking this request to? So sometimes it's going to the owner. But if you think about it, an owner has to answer every call because they don't know who's on the other end of that line. If they outsource it to us, they only need to answer the calls that really they need to have some input on. So first of all, you'd never be told, no, you can't get a supervisor. Yeah. And the second thing is that our goal is that people aren't so frustrated with you that they're having to ask for a supervisor. That person they're speaking with or chatting with or emailing should be able to service them and should know themselves when they need to reach out to the next level of assistance.
I see. So let's talk about breadth of service here. So obviously you have phone support.
Correct.
Chat support for the website.
Yes.
So people can get that way. What about social media? This is obviously becoming hot. You go someplace and you have a problem, and the first thing I do is walk out to the parking lot and get in my car and pull Twitter open and go at whatever company I had the problem with. Here's what just happened. And the bigger companies, they're monitoring that and they're firing back very quickly. Are you helping small companies monitor those social feeds so that they can jump on these problems quickly?
Well, now, that actually brings up a good point about Sizzing, because when you outsource Sizzing, you actually get a team of people. You don't get a person that's experienced just in one thing. So we provide you with a team and we give the minutes that are being needed at that moment to the proper person on the team. And we have systems for being able to do that. And we do not say that we are social media content experts. So we can do things like monitor it, but we can also manage vendors that are social media experts in terms of being, because a big part of social media is providing the correct content, right? So we're not content providers, but we can manage your content providers should you choose to outsource that. We also can monitor and keep an idea so that we know when to be able to reach out to the social media experts. You need, you know, we have in-house graphic artists and graphic designers, because we already know your business. And so if you have a need for that, then we can provide that. We have in-house application developers, and we can do things like being able to edit, you know, make small edits to your website. So we're probably not going to be the company. We'll work with a vendor that will build the website, but if you need something changed on it, then we can reach out and do that. So remember, we're allowing your high income earner people to do their job and what it is that they need, as and give the small tasks and things that need to happen, and communicating well with the customer, which really takes a level of expertise put into place, allow us to do that. And it allows people, companies to do that in a very scalable way, which hiring an employee is not scalable, right? Because when your business goes down, you can't say, well, I just need less time from you this month. And I don't know if anybody's ever tried to hire an employee 6 minutes every hour, but probably not going to work, right?
That's about what some of them are getting, but right. but they're paying for the full hour. Right,
right, exactly.
Well, let's do this. Let me bring Anthony back into the conversation now, because what I want to talk about is I want to get some of the things that are unique about you guys. I want to talk some more about the culture of the organizations, because both of you are involved in very rapidly growing companies. So, Stacey, help me understand. You guys were on the Fortune 500 fastest growing companies?
Fortune 5,000.
5,000.
Yes. For 2 years in a row, we were in the top 50% the first time, top 25% the next.
Nice. Okay.
And so, yes, we have been growing and expanding. And we really just moved into this market because I've been a small business owner since I was 17 years old. It's a lot of years. I'm not going to tell you how many, but it's been a while. And I really have a passion for small business. And it's not an easy road all the time, especially if you're in a growth curve and trying to figure everything out, and your customers are so important to you, and you need to retain those customers in order to be able to keep growing. And that's what we can help companies to do, so that they can do what they do best.
Gotcha. And Anthony, your company led the way for UGA alum on the Bulldog 100 this year, I believe. Have I got that right?
Yeah, it was quite an honor.
Not, and I share the background with you. I'm a Georgia alum myself. So,
go Dogs.
So Florida, Tennessee, Auburn, you guys out there, you can go ahead and tune out right now. We're going to talk Georgia for a minute. Mm-hmm. We won't talk about some of the things with Georgia, but hey, we had an okay season.
The positive things.
So we'll stay on the positive things.
Mostly positive.
Let's talk things. About the fact that you're leading that Bulldog 100. So how has your company been able to grow so rapidly and really have success in this marketplace?
Well, it really comes from the fact that back in 2009, we really spotted this trend that business was really slowing down, particularly in accounting and finance. And I alluded to this earlier. We knew we needed to adapt to change. We needed to diversify. And that's when we got into the IT market. And it is because of the IT market and the fast growth in there, and combining that, we built this model, which we've talked about, it enabled us to immediately capture revenue and start providing services into this space. And as it's grown, we have been able to attract more and more of the top talent that we've needed to service our clients. So it's one thing to have a great service, but if you can't find people to come work for you to provide that service, you know, you're really stuck. But because we're kind of like in that cloud model that you've brought up, Stacey, is that we're able to bring these some of our virtual recruiters in to help us. So that's really helped fuel that growth. And now that the market is really starting to heat up in IT, we've already got a model ready to go. We don't have to go out and figure out how is it going to work. We have a very wide base on the pyramid that's already built, and now we can just grow up.
Well, Stacey talked about you can't empower people without systems, because you'll have anarchy and chaos. What are some of the systems that you found to be most beneficial inside of Jobtopia to control the empowerment of your people so your company can have rapid growth?
Well, that's a great question. The way we have organized the company is through technology. There's no way we could be all working together to solve a client staffing problem if we didn't have a centralized software that we use. So that's one of the systems that we have in place, is that we all use a centralized software system where all the pertinent information and activity of what's going on moment by moment is there for all of us to see. And then what we do is we assign responsibilities throughout to each of the individuals within the company. So everyone knows at every time, these are the customers that I'm responsible for, these are the professionals that we are out actively looking for, and that person has all the responsibility then to work in their team or by themselves to identify and attract, you know, this talent. So it's not a situation where a new customer comes in and it's just kind of left there for us to decide who wants it. No, we're very organized and very structured on how we organize our internal teams to go after and service that customer. But outside of that, we keep a pretty loose structure. You start telling people how to be creative, they're not creative. If you tell people how to be innovative, they're not innovative. So, you know, you have to encourage, but you really have to leave it with them.
Well, that's very true. And you did the positive and negative reinforcement of it. I don't know if you guys watch Celebrity Apprentice, but this past Sunday there was a conversation around that where one of the competitors on the ladies' team was talking. She was the creative charge of the group project that week, and they had lost the challenge, and so they're trying to figure out, you know, okay, who do you blame? Who's going to get fired? And it's like, well, if the creative part was the bad part, then maybe we should fire the creative person. And she goes, look, if you're going to attack the person who came up with the ideas, let me tell you what's going to happen. She goes, everybody's going to start shutting down and nobody's going to give ideas. They're just going to sit here and clam up because they don't want to be in the hot seat. So how do you balance that? Stacey, maybe it's your company. How do you balance allowing that creative expression, allowing people to have some leeway to grow and do things within the company, and yet not, you know, not lose total control?
Well, as I talked about Epic earlier, mm-hmm. that's really the way we do that. So our Epic system starts from who we hire all the way through how we manage those people and how they're compensated. So if you think about it, if I can give you an analogy quickly, when you learn how to drive, you're not told you must go here, make a right, then go here and make a left, and that's the only path you're ever allowed to drive, right?
Except no. your driving test, and then right. that's exactly yes. how
it's done. this is very true.
I'm sorry, that'll take me off on a whole new tangent. Back to you.
Let's stay focused here.
But that's because there has to be some system to decide whether or not people are ready to be let out on their own, mm-hmm. correct? So that would also be part of what we do, right? But instead, what you're taught are the rules of the road. What can you do? You must drive on the right-hand side of the road. Everybody knows that. So it gives you, when you get to an intersection, you have to decide in your own mind where it is that you're going. But when you get ready to make a right or a left, you're not going to be headed into oncoming traffic. Well, most of us will not be headed into oncoming traffic, right? But then, you also have to have systems in place to be able to pull the people off the road that don't follow the rules. And so that would be, I would say, a great analogy for how we implement being able to empower people with being able to decide what it is they need to do and where they need to go without saying you must do this and you must do that, but at the same time having a good result.
Let's talk about results, because that's how I tend to talk to small business owners. They always want to know, what's the right way to do this? You know, what's the right way to do that? What's the right way to train my sales team or right way to run my staff? And in my mind, there's not a right and wrong. I mean, I get in driving, there's some de factos, and maybe in business there are a few of those, right? But for the most part, I don't look at things as right or wrong in business. I look at it as they either work or they don't work. You know, Anthony, maybe you want to jump in here. How do you guys really look at performance and results as a driving factor to make these key decisions in your business?
We would probably look at that in two ways. You can look at success being, did the client hire the people they needed to hire? Did you successfully staff that project? But we're going to take that a step further, because if you have not built a relationship in that process, then it's been a short-term gain. And we all know how hard it is to attract customers. So you would much rather have a short-term and a long-term gain. So we're going to evaluate how successful were we by, does that customer call us back? You know, have the candidates that we've worked with that did not get that position, the ones that may not have been selected, how do they feel about us? Are they still telling their friends, I had a great experience at Jobtopia. No, I didn't get that role. I made it down to a finalist, but they chose someone else. But I'm going to work with Jobtopia because, they were truly listening and helping me get what I wanted. So we take it a little step further. We feel like we're in a relationship business where so many of our competitors think of it as a transaction business. And the people that we work with kind of walk away with a different feeling, all right? And that feeling is, we do want to work with them again. So that's really how we're going to be looking at success. And then internally, we look at success in terms of how hard someone's working, how productive they are. We can't always control the end result. You know, companies change their mind. They decide not to hire. A project may suddenly lose funding. But if someone has gone to the effort, made the phone calls, made the relationships, and brought the great talent into Jobtopia that we could provide that client, we consider that an internal success, because we just can't control the ultimate success, with that customer.
Right. Stacey, how about for you guys?
I would say that at Elja, we define success as doing what we say we're going to do. That's very important for all of our customers, so making sure that we keep those balls in the air. And we have a lot of metrics that are watched, and we have a quality department so that everything is reviewed. So I couldn't even begin to tell you exactly, because success for us is different for each customer. Our application is very specific to who it is that we're servicing. Otherwise, we couldn't do what we do, right? So I guess if you're just going to sum it all up, you'd have to say we do what we say we're going to do.
All right. Well, guys, this has been great content so far. Let's turn our attention to our audience now and let them know how they can identify if they should raise their hand and be talking to you guys, and then if so, how they go about getting in touch with you. So, Stacy, if you want to take the ball first, tell us a little bit about who an ideal fit is for Cizing, how I would know that I should be calling you, and then how would I get in touch with you and find out more information.
Okay. The ideal customer for Cizing for small businesses, a business that has really reached revenues of at least $500,000, and the sweet spot is from $500,000 up to about $10 million in revenues. It's a wide range because different types of businesses count their revenues a little bit differently, but that, I would say, is the sweet spot for what and when it's time. If you're thinking to yourself, you know, I need to hire somebody or I need to hire an additional person in order to handle the needs of my customers, not from the perspective of the business that you do, but from handling the customer's needs, then that's the time to reach out to Cizing. And you can go to www.cezing.com. And there's a telephone number there. As you mentioned, we are a startup, so we're just getting the website created and stuff, but there will be a friendly voice on the other side of the line to be able to help you. And we really just want to be able to talk to you and talk about what your needs are as a small business that can be handled remotely and how we can service you.
Anthony, how about for you guys?
Well, typically our customers are found within with the CIO and with the CFO and their organization. So if you're a CIO or if you're a CFO and there are business challenges and strategic initiatives that you're launching within your organizations that require additional resources, all right, those are the kind of people that want to turn to us for our expertise. Beyond the CFO and the CIO organizations, anyone in a senior leadership position within HR or strategic staffing will take an interest in us because they're managing vendor list. And for many of our services with some of the bigger companies, we have to be on a vendor list. And Stacy, you brought up the size companies that you work with. We really truly do work with all size organizations. We have, you know, we work with some of the world's largest companies, such as a Coca-Cola, a GE on a national level, and we also work with very small technology startups. So we really don't limit, all right? It's more, what is the customer looking for, and can we honestly do what they need us to do, and can we fulfill that?
And how would they go about getting in touch with you?
They could, first of all, look on the internet. Our website is www.jobtopiallc.com, or they could reach out to our main number, which is 770-521-2225.
Well, Stacy, I want to thank you for being on the show today. Anthony, thank you for being here. You guys have given some great insight. I hope some of the small businesses out there will take advantage of your services, and some of the larger ones too. And I hope that those of you listening really took some things today that you can do differently in your business, that you can really step outside of some of the traditional norms that maybe you've become complacent with and you're just finding you're not getting the growth that you're looking for. Remember, I always say on this show every week, and I'm going to say it again as we depart today, opportunity lies in the impossible, but you've got to be willing to break the rules of conventional thinking. Until next time.